Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Mondays with Mindy. I am here, as always, thank you, God, with my co-host and co-producer, Christian Brescia.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show.
Couldn't do this without you, Christian. Wouldn't want to.
Same.
Anyway, today we are having a conversation with actor and filmmaker Paul Feig.
The one and only.
Yeah. Born and raised in Michigan. Big deal for us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Born and raised in Michigan, Paul moved to Los Angeles to attend USC. While there, he began work as a tour guide at Universal Studios. He embarked on a career in stand-up and landed various roles in television and film, including movies Ski Patrol and Heavyweights with Ben Stiller. He also co-starred in the first season of Sabrina the Teenage Witch, playing the role of Mr. Eugene Poole. And in 1986, guest starred on an episode of The Facts of Life.
No kidding.
Which is where I first met Mr. Feig.
I didn't know that.
Yes. In 1999, Paul created the comedy series Freaks and Geeks with Heavyweights co-scripter Judd Apatow. Inspired by his high school experiences, the show was canceled after 12 episodes, but developed a cult following and was named in Time Magazine's 100 Greatest Shows of All Times.
Wow.
And I happen to agree with that assessment.
Same.
Paul made his directing debut with the drama I Am David. And a couple years later, the Christmas comedy film Unaccompanied Minors. In 2011, Paul directed a little film called Bridesmaids and became a top grossing Academy Award nominated comedic masterpiece. The Heat followed in 2013. And in 2015, Paul wrote, directed and produced Spy, his third successful blockbuster co-starring Melissa McCarthy. That same year, Paul produced the animated feature The Peanuts Movie. In 2017, Paul produced Snatched, starring Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn, as well as the comedy thriller A Simple Favor, starring Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively. 2019 brought Paul back to directing with the romantic comedy Last Christmas, and bigger news that his production company, Feig Co., would be moving to Universal Pictures. Up next will be his production of the new Fox show, This Country, with my dearest darling, Jenny Bix, who has graced us with an episode of Mondays with Mindy.
That's right.
The series is a mockumentary based on the British series of the same name. And Paul is going to be joining us from Belfast, where he is working on his latest film, The School for Good and Evil. Paul lives in Los Angeles and London with his wife, who I adore, Lori.
This is amazing. I am so excited to officially meet him. Ladies and gentlemen, all the way from London, Paul Feig.
Belfast.
All the way from Belfast.
Woohoo!
What? Hey, thank you so much.
Hello.
Mindy, it's so good to see you. Christian, it's so good to see you. What a pleasure.
Nice to see
always,
you, sir.
Always. Thank you so much for gracing us with your presence for this half hour.
Yeah. Please. It's a thrill.
Oh, it's been a minute since I've seen you at our mutual pal, Jill Cargman's in New York.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That was fun. And we love Jill. It's the greatest. And then yes. Before that, I saw you back in the 80s on the set.
True. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So we start each episode with my trusty little Johnny Adler canister of secrets. We have 20 questions. I pick 5 at random. We just start gabbing.
I like
so
it.
Here we go.
Let's do it. Here we go.
Paul, do you yes. have a hidden talent?
Do I have a hidden talent? Oh, my goodness. I have so many. I guess hidden because I'm a good cocktail maker, but I haven't hidden that because I've been put out. I'm actually a good cook. A lot of people don't know that. I'm a pretty good cook. I'm not a gourmet cook, but I'm actually can whip up a lot of stuff. And I'm a good Italian cook, if you will.
Nice.
And I can take a bunch of ingredients and figure something out for them. It's like low rent Iron Chef.
I'll take it. A low rent eater. So great. What is the best advice you've been given and who gave it?
It's a great question. I think it's funny. It's hard to put down into like a one sentence sort of piece of advice, but I think the best advice I got was from Greg Daniels when I was on The Office, directing a lot of The Offices. It was more just the advice of, he wanted to make sure that everybody in the writer's room, everybody around him creatively was deputized to challenge him on anything and to challenge anything, even if everybody else has decided this is right, to say like, actually, I have an issue with that and, you know, to listen to everybody so that you're not just sort of benevolently or non-benevolently, I should say, telling people what to do. So that's a good way to kind of figure out what's working, what not, and what people want to hear and what they like creatively.
And it's rare. Yeah. As you get more and more successful, your bubble tends to get a thicker membrane there. Yeah.
Amen to that.
Paul, what's your favorite place to travel to and why?
Oh, okay. I think
it's not your residence.
Oh, well, forget it. The bathroom. No, I would say, I can pronounce it either the douchey way or the nice Capri. Lori and I love Capri. We've been going for years and years. Like, we try to go once a year, and it's so special to us because it's small. A lot of people go there. Like, I'll go, we've been to Capri. Like, we went for a day and we didn't like it. It's like, you can't go for a day because in the day it's all tourists and these boats bring people. But if you're there at night, it's like the old French Riviera. Like, everybody's dressed up and it's very elegant, and it's just, everything's great about it.
Okay.
That's been a favorite. That's been mentioned before as a favorite place in here.
There you go.
Yes. Well, our friend Alina Cho goes every year as well. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is she says the same thing. You don't go for a weekend. You really stay. You have a proper stay. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't really go for a day trip. Flavor. Amen to that.
Paul, what do you splurge on?
Oh, God. What don't I splurge on? I have some thing where I get obsessed with stuff and then I get a bunch of it and then I stop and I go to the next thing. I think it's probably called OCD. I don't know. But I'm obsessed with watches. I love watches. I'm obsessed with clothes and suits. I get a lot of suits. New obsession is dressing gowns. Very into dressing gowns, but like elegant, beautiful men's dressing gowns, which are made by a company called New and Lingwood. And every time they do a new bunch, I'm like, oh, I have to get that. So I have all these dressing gowns now. It's my assistant who has to like unpack all my stuff and send it and all this. You know, he pointed the rack when he was unloading my stuff. He said, "I think you have a problem." It's like, okay.
Yes. Well, a new problem. It's a good problem.
Yes. So many problems.
I like it. I like it a lot. Among your friends, Paul, what are you best known for?
Oh, gosh. Drinking.
I have noticed that your social scene revolves around cocktail hour. Yes.
Yeah, you know what it is? It's like kind of, I'm always the guy that brings things to make, and I like to make cocktails. It's my fun. As much as I like cooking for people, I really love making drinks for people because, you know, most people aren't sad if you give them a cocktail, you know? And so there's something really exciting about, like, oh, I have a new recipe, or I like inventing recipes and all that. So, so I think I'm known as the good time cocktail guy.
I like this. And the sadness comes later after too many, perhaps.
Oh, of course. Of course. Yes. I put it in the drink. I put the sadness in.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So, Paul, Christian and I decided, about a year ago now, to start this because, truth be told, I was kind of okay during the beginning of COVID. I tend to be a little bit of a nester. So I was okay, but I missed connecting to creative sorts. I tend to get fueled by co-creatives and inspired and aspire. And so we started to reach out and talk to people that I knew and people. Thank you, Jenny Bix, for putting Paul and I back together.
Yay. Amen.
Yay.
And Craig Fassay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Our friend Craig.
So we talk about the creative process, which I know sounds so lofty and I try to be pithy about it. But what is your creative process? I'm going to talk about as a writer and director, not so much a producer at this point, as you define it. Do you write every day, for instance?
No, I don't. I used to write every day. Now I write when I find the thing that I want to write, and then I dig in, but I kind of have to cocoon at certain times to do it. But I'm always on the lookout for ideas, which means just I'm constantly jotting note and just scanning the zeitgeist for just what is the next idea. Because, you know, as you know, we're like receptors. We kind of walk around and wait for this radio wave to go like, oh my God, that's it. And you generate other ones. So you're always going like, okay, let me try to build one. But my best and most successful things have come from these like flash of light or, you know, kind of thing where you're like, oh, like two synapses, I think, go together. And then suddenly there it is. Then I dive in and write. And then I'm a very fast writer. I write, you know, mm-hmm. get through a first draft. I do 5 pages a day is my rule for myself. So within, wow. you know, yeah, within less than a month, I've got a first draft. But then it's also just being hard on the ideas and really, you know, there's so many ideas that you have that you go like, oh, I'd love to do that. But then you have to then go like, okay, but does anyone want to see that? And it's a hard litmus test to put on an idea. But if you are really honest with yourself, it does weed out a lot of things that might just end up being like a vanity project or something like that. You know, because I'm also trying to make product for, you know, these studios so that the budgets are going to be high. So, you know, you have to be commercial, which is the ugly word. But I don't mind that because to me, commercial means people like, you know, it appeals to a lot of people.
They want to see it.
Yeah, agreed. Where you grew up in Michigan, has that flavored your aesthetic or as you've grown and obviously you and Lori split your time between Los Angeles and London, has your aesthetic changed at all?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. You know, I love that I'm from the Midwest because I always have this very Midwestern take on the world, which is, I think it's we're very hard on dishonesty and very easy to pick it up. You know, that's why I think I've been, you know, not bad as a director is because I'm really able to go, performance doesn't feel honest. That moment doesn't feel right. Let's change that. It feels written. It feels too this or that. So, no, but I've tried to carry it forward. I mean, you know, it's, you know, I've lived in LA for so long. I mean, you know, 40 years, even with going back and forth. And, you know, you just have to protect yourself from getting too showbizzed. You know, there's just certain things. It's almost like you start to know too much. And you lose the side of you that was also open and kind of dumb enough to go like this, who wouldn't want to see this? You know, that's where the kind of the pure ideas come from, you know, and then you learn enough, you know, like I love Freaks and Geeks. I don't know if I would have done it now knowing everything that I know. But back then it was like, who wouldn't want to see this show? You know, so you try to stay in touch with who you were, but bring the rules that are good forward and disperse the bad rules.
Yes, I appreciate that. That's the New York for me. I tend to recalibrate there so I can live in LA, especially as an actor. It just really helps me go, oh, community, about the performance, not the autographs and sunglasses.
Yeah, totally. Because I actually, we have a place in New York. That's where I go to write because I find that's like the best place to do it for me because I can get all the energy of the city. And if I hit a roadblock, you go, let's just go walk around and like see all these people and get all this human energy. So I'm with you on that.
Totally.
What is inspiring you right now? Or can I even ask what you were binging on during your first part of COVID that really kind of like hit you and went, ooh, that touches me right in the inspiration gene.
Well, yeah, there you go.
Yes. Sorry, Paul.
Clever way to put it.
It's always a pleasant feeling when that happens. you know what? We went deep, deep into old movies. Yeah. I mean, I rediscovered my love of William Powell. That's why I have this ridiculous mustache. I'm literally just copying William Powell.
It's brilliant.
But those movies. Yeah. I mean, all those movies of the 30s, I just love the world they create. It was, you know, coming out of the Depression and all this stuff. And just this whole alternate universe of supper clubs and these glamorous people and these, you know, glamorous situations, but they're still, everybody's really funny and the men and women are very equal. You know, and it's just the stories are very clever, too, because they're very of the time, but they're fun and funny and the performances are just crazy. And we just literally did such a deep dive that we ran out. We were kind of like, oh, no, like we ran out of William Powell movies and all these other ones that, you know, screwball comedies and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So just tacking a little bit, not so much about the creative process, but you have been very forthcoming in your struggle when you first came to L.A. And what I love about you just specifically is that there seemed to be this ever just terminal optimism and attached to your wanting to tell stories and storytelling. And I don't think that's ever been lost. At least as an audience member, I see it in your work a lot I appreciate it. But was there a point or something that happened that you felt you needed to tack and lose the acting front and doing the stand-up and pivot towards writing and directing?
Yeah, well, I kind of got kicked out of the nest mentally because I'd always wanted to do it. My goal was to, you know, when I was all the way from a kid through film school and everything, was to write, direct, and star in my own movies. And so that was what I was really going to work towards. But then, you know, I got into acting and I was doing stand-up comedy, and then I was an actor. And it was just, I enjoyed being an actor. It was really fun, you know, that, you know, when you suddenly would get a, you know, I got a regular role on a show I'm taking care of for hopefully, you know, 9 years, but, you know, at least for the next year, they're going to tell me what to wear, yeah, and they're going to cut my hair, and they're going to feed me and all this stuff. So I just really loved that. But I always wanted to go behind the camera, was writing all the time and all that, but was kind of just afraid to take that extra move. And it was really when I was finally on a hit show, because I'd been on 4 other TV series that all had fallen apart, mm-hmm, after the first season, when I was on Sabrina the Teenage Witch, right, and it was going to be a hit. So I was like, oh, good, I'm set for 7 years. So I took all my money from that first year and I put it into this little independent feature that I wrote, directed, and starred in. And then they wrote me out of the show, and I had kind of bankrupted Laurie and I by making that movie. But it was the thing that I needed to kick me out of the nest, because it was like, I don't like not having control as an actor anymore. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was a terrible year. But then at the end of that year, I created Freaks and Geeks and then, you know, went forward and kind of never looked back. And, you know, I enjoy acting if somebody calls up and says, hey, will you do this little part? But other than that, I really love being behind the camera. So much fun.
Yeah. And the production aspect of it happens, for people who kind of don't know this sort of history, when you write and produce and create your own, it is kind of a natural foray into production. But your official production company happened because, what is that aspect now, that businessman hat that you wear?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was after I did the movie The Heat. We did that over at Fox, and we had such a nice time and got along with everybody at the studio so much that they were, mm-hmm, like, they wanted to give us a first look deal. And so, you know, which means basically whatever we come up with, we take to the studio. They have first bite at it. And if they don't do it, then we can take it somewhere else. But then they pay for our offices and our overhead. It allows me to hire a small staff and a business partner. And so that's what I did. And started Feedco. How original.
Yes, and, I love it.
Yeah, thank you. you know, and it was great. I never knew if I wanted a company, but the minute I got one, I was like, this is great, because it's just, there's so much angst about having to do everything yourself. And when you just, I love being, you know, my father instilled this in me. He's like, you know, said, hire professionals, whether it's your accountant or your something else or whatever, vet them, hire good people, and then let them do their thing. And so that's what's been so great, is the, you know, people who've been in my company who are in it now and people who were in it before are all great and really just have great take on things, but aren't afraid to challenge me on things and are very honest. And also then they're able to take, you know, I have 4 series, TV series now. And, mm-hmm, you know, back then without a company, I would have even tried, because like, how am I going to do that? But now, you know, you learn to delegate, you have great people who are doing it, you're, you know, overseeing stuff, but they're doing their thing. And I, you know, I also want to be a producer who doesn't go in and go like, do it this way. I don't like that, because I've been with producers who do that. It's like, yes, that's my voice. I want you guys to have your voice. I want to protect your voice, and I can give you some advice. And occasionally I see something, go like, oh, well, maybe try this, or I don't think this works. But beyond that, I want them to do their thing. And so it's been working quite well.
And then out of all that content, how do you decide what you want to personally helm as far as directing?
Yeah, that's the hardest thing, because there's a lot of things you go like, oh, let's make this, but I don't want to make that because, you know, it's a year out of my life generally to make a movie at least. It's, I don't know, these ideas, it's like meeting a spouse, you know, it's really, you just kind of, you go dating every time you're reading scripts. Or when you're brainstorming, or like, oh, this idea that I'm going to write, you know, because some of my movies I write myself, others I, you know, I find scripts and then I rewrite them or whatever. But it's, you don't know. It's kind of like in casting. You kind of open the door and you're like, oh, they're all really that's good. It. And then the one person comes in, you're just like, oh, that's it. Like that's nobody it. Else exists. Yeah.
Yeah. And what is this? I mean, you do have this sort of professional partnership with Melissa McCarthy. Has that been happenstance, or is it just like, okay, we are delicious together, we must just continue this meal? What? Because there's, you know, we always hear about these teams of people, and you and she just get each other. And as an audience member, it's magic.
Mm-hmm. Hey, no, I love her. She's great. But we never set out to work together on any movie. I mean, we've done four together now. And each time, yeah. I mean, Bridesmaids, I didn't know who she was, you know, and it was right. Kristen and Annie. We're like, oh, you got to see our friend Melissa. And then we were like, oh, my God, she's great. But then coming out of that, you know, when the script for The Heat came in, I knew that Sandra wanted to do it. But then I was like, who am I going to put in this? And then was like, wait, Melissa would be really funny in this. Then Spy, I literally wrote that for somebody else who then didn't want to do it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I wrote it for somebody else. And they didn't want to do it. And I was going to go to somebody else for it. And Melissa was over at my house one night for dinner. And she goes, what are you doing? Oh, I got this Spy movie. She was like, can I read it? And I was like, well, sure. But I didn't even send it to her because she was going to do Mike and Molly and I wanted to do it when she was going to be doing that show. But she read it and called me the next day. Like, she's like, I have to do this. Would you wait for me? And I was like, sure. So, and then Ghostbusters again, when I did that, I go like, okay, I'm just going to clear the slate. We just wrote it. And then somebody was like, you know what? Melissa would be great in this. So it's crazy. It just kind of, we never ever go like the next movie we're going to do together. So, you know, but now I've done three movies without her. So, doing a gazillion. So when the right thing is there, then, you know, there's nobody more fun to work with than Melissa. My God, she's so.
Yes. Yeah, so who are you wanting to work with, Paul? Who's on your list? Oh, give me some names.
I can't give you a name. Exactly. How terrible if I gave a name. You know what it is for me? I don't even kind of, occasionally there's somebody go like, oh, I want to get that. But I kind of pin people and go like, that person needs to be in something where they can showcase that thing I see about them in real life that they don't show. Yeah. And so I kind of file that away. And then it's all about the idea and the script and the characters. And then once I kind of have it, then it's like, who are you going to put in this? And, you know, so it sounds like a cop-out, but I do kind of have a blank brain on that because I almost don't like the, because you know why? Because I've developed a few things for people and then they bail on me at the last minute. And so it's like, you know what? Let's just make it about the character and then we'll fit somebody into it.
Yeah. No, that makes sense, believe it or not. But I always wonder if people have these like dream list people. I mean, my list, the older I get, it tends to be the older actors because I'd like to get them before they're not here anymore. I think as we, you know, I just lost my dearest darling Cloris and we had always talked about working together again. Right. And so, you know, those people for me, I tend to gravitate towards the 80 plus people because I want to get them in my grasp or at least in front of my face.
That's extremely valid. Yeah. No, I do have a little list of it, but I'm always afraid to say it because then somebody else will hire them. Oh, I'm not on your list. I don't know.
Yeah.
I have to be very careful, Mindy.
Well, I do have to say it's, again, one of the things that even though we see each other, I don't know, I think our thing now is every 12 years we have a sighting.
Yes.
But
it's in my schedule coming up.
Yes, fantastic. We have a little anniversary. But what I love is that there does seem to be this old school, and I am calling it old school and wrapping my arms around it very loosely, is that there is a difference between friendships and adoring someone and work. And for me, I've always been able to, one of the things that I compliment, you know, jump back, kiss myself for, that I can differentiate between a social thing and a work thing. And a lot of people can't. I've noticed as either I get older, has the business changed where it becomes so much more personal. Have you found that too, where it's sort of become muddied the waters, as it will?
Yeah. And I always try to avoid working with friends, which sounds too big of a statement, but especially like behind the scenes, because I just had so many times where it's blown up in my face, you know, and because you want to give somebody a shot. And then, you know, I don't know. It's like my wife is always like, she never wants to have anybody like, oh, I can do something, a favor, if I can fix that for you for a favor. It's like, no, I don't want that. I want somebody that I'm paying. So if something goes wrong, I can yell at you, you know, and I'm not always like, oh, do you mind coming over? I know you're busy doing this. I'll do it for free. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, so it's, I feel like it's that too, because, you know, Mindy, you know, all of us in the business, what the thing we really have that's the most important is our reputation. And so the minute you're
Paul Feig.
Isn't it true? Because I mean, if I suddenly go like,
I said, actors, unfortunately, specifically have two things. Their talent and their reputation. That's it. You have control over that. So finish your thought. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I like want to do a dance.
No, I love that. Please. No, but I mean, that thing of like, you know, if I go like, okay, I'm going to recommend this person who's a friend. I don't know if they can do it, or I think there's somebody better who can do it, but I'm going to do them a favor. And if they the bed, for lack of a better term, then
yes.
Who looks bad? I look bad because they're like, you said that person was good. Then it's like, next time I recommend somebody, they're like, yeah, well, you said that other person was good. So it's tough though, because sometimes you're just like, I so want to help you out, but I can't, you know, let's find something else that I know you can do.
Yes. Well, as and Christian has heard, you know, my mother always says, you know, all these people, Mindy, can't they? Dot, dot, dot. And it's like, you know what? How many times was I on Facts of Life where someone asked me for a favor? And I did it and felt like crap because I really didn't want to, but the people pleaser in me did it. And so I've never, ever, ever wanted to put someone in that position. And my feeling is what's mine is mine. What's not mine. There's nothing I can do to make it happen. It's very easy for me. So while I have tremendous neuroses in my personal life, professionally, I'm very built for it.
Right. Well, I love that. That layman's kind of view of showbiz too. I had an uncle who drove me crazy back in the day, and he would always get like, well, I did a guest spot on Newhart once where I was just like this tiny, tiny supporting character. And Peter Scolari was the star of the scenes I was in. And so my uncle came to the taping, and afterwards he's like, I go, do you have fun? He goes like, I was so mad at that Peter Scolari guy. I go, why? He goes, he had all those lines. He couldn't have given some of those to you. And it's just like, you know what? Just don't ever come to the show again. You know, that's your takeaway. Hey, Peter, I'm going to take a few of these. Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah. Well, I am determined to see you back on screen. I have a couple of ideas for sure.
I love it.
Yeah. Talk about, I know that you are in pre-production of your new film, and this has taken up, I'm sure, most of your COVID time in getting ready for it, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And is this going to take another year of your life? Is that what's on tap for you?
Yeah, this is another year. I mean, it's a big one. It's a big kind of effects-driven. I want to say effects-driven because I'm trying to do a lot of stuff practically. I'm not very kind of trying to keep CG to a minimum. But still, there's going to be a lot to do after it.
It's
based on a series. Yeah, exactly. It's such a big world. But it's based on a series of books called The School for Good and Evil. And it's the kind of movie I thought I'd never make. And I read the script and I was like, I'm not a fantasy guy, really. I like reading it and I always grew up with it, but I never was drawn to making a fantasy movie because of all the crazy CGI I end up having to do and all that stuff. But, and also I always, it's like why I don't have a great love of superhero movies, because I don't know the stakes of a superhero movie, because I'm like, okay, can they get hurt? Are they hurt now? You know?
Yes.
He punches through a building and a building falls on him. So he looks like he's hurt, but then he's still going. So, okay. Versus like, a human being, I know when they get hurt, I know when they get killed, you know, and that's the stakes for me. So, but then I just love this story so much because it was basically this story about these two female best friends going into this world. And I saw a lot of opportunity for comedy in it, but still keeping it real and keeping the stakes high. And just felt like something I had to do. And I've just been having a blast putting this together and working with such an A team of talent, you know, so it's really been fun.
Well, I'm so excited for you. And I want to thank you, kind sir, for taking your time, which I know is very slim at this point in your life.
My pleasure.
Joining Christian and I for this amazing episode of Mondays with Mindy.
Mindy, Christian, thank you so much. It's an honor to be on here and it's great to see you. Always a pleasure.
Always. Always.
So grateful to have him, ladies and gentlemen, all the way from Belfast, Paul Feig.
Hi, there we go. I'm off for a Guinness.
This episode of Mondays with Mindy is brought to you in part by our sponsors, The Cocktail Party, Love Mary, and Beekman 1802. Tired of cooking? Love fancy hors d'oeuvres but don't have any idea how to prepare? Look no further. The Cocktail Party, Love Mary, is here. For 15 years, New York's caterer to the stars and our pal, Mary Giuliani, has served her deliciously whimsical hors d'oeuvres to the best names in art, fashion, and entertainment. Now she's put them all in an adorable little box to send from her heart to your home. As Mary says, all you have to do is turn on your oven, pour yourself a drink, and enjoy more time with your guests. She'll take care of the rest. Go to MaryGiuliani.com or MondaysWithMindy.com for more information and to order yours today. At Beekman 1802, we believe there's nothing more beautiful than kindness. We work hard every day to provide exceptional beauty products and cultivate moments of kindness to inspire our community of Beekman neighbors. Visit Beekman1802.com or MondaysWithMindy.com and discover our range of goat milk soaps, body care, and clinically proven skincare.